It's Tuesday, 30th of March. It's time to get your grin on with the Grincast, here to discuss the world of gaming from the past week. I'm your host, Ace, and joining me is Nikki.
Hello.
And we have a special guest this week, Sean Baichu.
Hello, everyone.
A well-known voice actor and mocap artist. Kick things straight over to you. Why don't you tell us a bit about yourself?
So, my name is Sean Baichu. I'm a Montreal-based actor. I do a lot of voice work and a lot of motion capture work, but I'm not just a voice actor. I also do theater, film, television, whatever else comes along. I'm also a fairly accomplished stunt fighter, fight choreographer. I do some of that as well. I've been working in the business for probably over 20 years now. And I work a lot for Ubisoft and Eidos. I've done some games for Warner Brothers as well and Red Barrels. Some of the titles of the games I've been in that people may recognize. There's Wrench in Watch Dogs 2 and the upcoming Watch Dogs Legion, which I'm very excited about to have reprised the role. I play Lion in Rainbow Six Siege. I was in a whole bunch of Assassin's Creed games. I played Machiavelli in Assassin's Creed 2 and Brotherhood. And I also played Duccio, Father Maffei, Stéphane Chaffaut in AC3. That's the guy who does the riot mechanics for you. And I also had a smaller part in AC Origins as well. I played Felix Marcialis, who I believe is the arena master of ceremonies owner type guy. I've also done the leads in a couple Red Barrel games, Outlast and Outlast 2. I play the main characters in both those games. I don't want to go through my entire list of credits. I also did a stunt choreography and takedown choreography specifically for Deus Ex Mankind Divided. I did all of Jensen's takedowns, and I motion captured all of the takedowns. And I've done mocap in dozens upon dozens of other games and had other smaller parts and things. I was also in The Outer Worlds. I'm in all three of those games, the two DLC and the main game. I played characters in all of those. And I also have another relatively big game coming out soon, but because it hasn't been released, I actually can't talk about it, but it's a pretty big title, and I have a fun part in that as well. So that's the bulk of my work experience. But like I said, I do tons of other stuff, like film and TV when the chance presents itself, theater, though I haven't done that in a while, commercials, and I also do a lot of dubbing. So a lot of shows on Netflix that are from Spain or Italy, France, that are dubbed into English. Sometimes I'm one of the characters on some of those shows doing the dubbing work. So yeah, I kind of have my fingers in a lot of different pies. But video games are my mainstay, which makes me happy because I'm a huge nerd and a giant gamer, and it's super fun and I love it. So there you go.
Okay, fantastic. You were Wrench. My wife is a big fan of Watch Dogs 2. She absolutely loves Wrench. She's actually the one who approached you on Twitter and asked you to get in contact with me.
Wonderful.
I've said on this podcast before that Watch Dogs 2 is the best of the Watch Dogs games because the other two are a bit dour.
Sure. I haven't really played Legion much, but I did think Watch Dogs 2 had a really nice amount of color and life to it that maybe was lacking in the first one, for sure.
Yeah. They each have their positives, but you can't help having a favorite. Of course, you can't really talk about Watch Dogs Legion, as you said. The DLC is not out yet, but how did it feel when they got in touch and let you know that they wanted Wrench back?
Oh my God, it was the best feeling in the world. Playing Wrench in Watch Dogs 2, I can honestly say was one of my favorite experiences as an actor working on any project. There was such a lovely sense of community, camaraderie between myself, Ruffin, John, the two Johns, and Tasia, who played Sitara. So we all got along really well. I became really good friends with John Dubsky, actually, and Rough and Nice to stay in touch, and John Tench and I also stay in touch. So we just formed this really nice bond. The director, the producer, everyone was just great. So, you know, the work itself was fun, the dialogue, but the experience of capturing all that, I think, was even more valuable to me. So that's what I was missing most when the project was wrapped. You know, Ruffin went back to New York, John went back to Toronto where he lived. Now he's back in Montreal, which is nice. But at the time, we all kind of scattered to the four winds. I stayed in Montreal because I was a local. Local hire. So, you know, my hope was that when Watch Dogs 3 would be announced, that I'd get some kind of heads up, probably before the fact, because they usually start pre-production pretty early on for most games. My hope, and the hope of most of DedSec, was that we'd come back, if not as the main characters, and maybe as a cameo, something. We thought they'd tie in 2 to 3, because they tied 1 into 2. But then when Legion was announced, and it really seemed like they were going in a completely different direction, it kind of dashed my hopes that I'd be back as Wrench, because it was in London, had nothing to do with DedSec, San Francisco. There wasn't even a main protagonist, right? There was just people you could recruit and kind of form your narrative. But I have to say, I really liked the idea. And I wasn't going to trash the idea because it meant that I wasn't going to get another paycheck for Wrench. Not that I played him for the money, of course. I just love playing him. But so, you know, when they announced the game and I saw the direction they were going in, I kind of put out of my mind as a possibility. And, you know, I wasn't planning on building my whole career around one character I've played. You know, I had other franchises going and other projects I was working on or auditioning for. So I just kind of moved on with my career as an actor, and just kind of out of nowhere, last year, I got an email, maybe about a third of the way through the pandemic, if I recall, asking if I was available for a project reprise. And there was some, the games use code names for projects so that there's no leaks. So I forget what it was. I'm not sure if I'm even allowed to say what it was. But I heard the name of the project, which meant nothing to me. Then it said for the role of Wrench. And then my heart just skipped a beat, and I was like, oh my God, it's happening. What the hell is this? And I'd kind of, I guess, clung to hope again when the game was announced, after the game was announced, because they announced Aiden. And I knew Aiden was going to be in some DLC. So my first thought was like, all right, well, if Aiden can come back, if they can, you know, mine Watch Dogs 1 for content for Legion, then what's stopping them from mining Watch Dogs 2? So I thought they might bring back DedSec for a cameo, maybe as some unlockable characters. I won't give away what the deal is in the game, but you know, when I found out what the deal was, that I'd be coming back and I'd be playing Wrench, I was just super happy, because it's something I'd been wanting to do for an extremely long time, since the game wrapped. So to know I had a chance to be back. And then once I read the script and spoke to the director and did all the actory stuff, I got even more excited, because they really nailed the character, because it's not the same team of writers. You know, I mean, these things evolve over time. They change hands. So the writers really nailed the character and his sensibilities. And I was encouraged and invited to get on board and wrenchify the whole thing and kind of make it my own, which I did and had an amazing time doing. So I got to tweak some dialogue and throw in a few ideas and just kind of make it feel more familiar. You know, exploring environments with this character that I was used to. So it was really a nice, unique situation for me as an actor. Actually, it's the first time this happens to me in my entire career, is coming back to play a character in a franchise that I had already established previously. So that was a really nice challenge and a really nice surprise. And now that experience of doing all that is over, I'm kind of back in the same position I was at the end of Watch Dogs 2. I'm like, I had such a great time. And it was a new cast of people, obviously new people I was dealing with, and a new director and a new location where we were shooting. And it was all kind of just as wonderful as the first time. So
now we're hoping that Wrench is the main character in Watch Dogs 4.
You never know. I mean, people in the past asked me, you know, a lot of fans are asking for Wrench to be the hero of his own game. Like, a lot of people thought it'd be nice to have a DLC, kind of like Bad Blood DLC, where you could play as T-Bone. Wasn't available in the first Watch Dogs game. I think people were hoping Ubisoft would do something similar, where they'd have a Wrench-focused DLC where he'd carry the whole story. And they'd ask me, you know, would I be down to do that if I got called back to do that. And obviously I would, because I love playing the character. But I would also say I love Wrench, but I'm not sure he's quite the kind of character who would lead a story. You know what I mean? You see that a lot in film, where a character is a strong supporting character, or a character from a TV show is a strong supporting character, and they give him his own spin-off or his own movie, and it just doesn't quite carry it as well, because the character is more effective as a supporting character or a backup character. You know what I like with Watch Dogs 2 is it's not Wrench's story, it's Marcus's story. Wrench is there to help Marcus in his story. Wrench doesn't really have much of an arc. He doesn't grow or learn or change. But you know what, after shooting Watch Dogs Legion DLC, I'm not so sure that's true anymore. Because Wrench does carry quite a lot of the narrative, and I think he does it just fine. And I think he's a really interesting character. You learn a lot more about him and who he is and what he's about, which was nice for me to discover that stuff too. You don't get all that information off the top. Sometimes, you know, other writers will expand on the mythology of the character, and you as the actor, you're kind of along for the ride. I think this is the perfect hybrid of those two ideas of, you know, he's still a supporting character in the larger narrative of Watch Dogs Legion, but it's still his story to an extent. And I think it works well. So, I got to come back and do the thing I was hoping I could do in a way that I wasn't sure would work. But in the end, it looks like they both worked out. I mean, we'll see what the fans think, what people who play the game think of the story, but I'd be pretty surprised if it wasn't well received, because I really think what we created was something really fun and solid, and I think the fans are going to be pretty happy with it.
Fantastic. Did you have to audition for Wrench? Because you've done, even before that, you'd done a number of roles for Ubisoft, so they knew you.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I actually didn't audition for Wrench. It's a bit of a circuitous story, in a sense. It's a bit of an atypical way of coming across a part. I'm very grateful for it, though, and it makes for a nice story when I try to tell younger actors who I may be talking to or mentoring, when they, you know, they want to know how to get to, let's say, you know, where I've gotten or achieve some of what I've achieved with my career. And you know, it really is a question of putting in the work, putting in the time, being professional, being present, being pleasant, you know, being selfless, being generous, doing all those things, building your cred, your value, your usefulness as an actor, that when the right time comes, someone who needs what you're good for, what you're best at, if those two things line up, then you have an opportunity to do something that no one else can do, right? And that's kind of what happened with Wrench. I started off working on, I don't think I ever auditioned for the first Watch Dogs either. But by that point, I'd been working with Ubisoft a lot. And Assassin's Creed, you know, a whole bunch of different titles I'd worked on, you know, playing villagers and merchants and soldiers and secondary or tertiary characters even. So they knew I could, you know, do the work. So I got a tiny part in Watch Dogs. I think it was just given to me where... I don't know if you remember at the beginning of the... Did you play the first Watch Dogs game?
I did.
yeah, at the beginning of the game, Aiden is at a baseball game, and he goes into the, like, the basement, the locker room, and this thug guy comes out, and he's like, yo, where you at? And then he sees Aiden, he's like, oh, shit, and he pulls out a gun. He's got, like, tattoos on his face, and then he gets shanked by Jordy. Jordy, like, stages the shootout scene. That's me. I'm the guy who gets shanked by...
oh, lovely.
By, I forget his name, Aaron Douglas, the actor who plays Jordy. The guy who plays Chief in Battlestar Galactica shanked me in the liver, so that was great. So I played him. I played him again in the prison scene later, and then I played a whole bunch of secondary living world characters. So vendors, this like pimp guy who gets arrested off the top of the game by some cops that you witness, like all sorts of minor, mostly non-speaking parts with a few spoken parts here and there. And then what happened is when the DLC came by for Bad Blood, the guy who'd been helping produce the game, this guy named Lars, he became the director for the DLC. And often people get cross-promoted or moved around on projects like these. So he liked working with me on the first Watch Dogs. So he said, hey, why don't you come play this character in Bad Blood? And there's a scene in Bad Blood where T-Bone breaks into a house to go talk to some guy who got jumped by some dudes, and the guy's completely bandaged up. He's like a paraplegic. He's in a bed. He can barely talk. He can't move. And then it's a pretty touching, touching scene. Sorry, I'm not tearing up. I'm actually choking on something. Excuse me. It's a touching scene where he kind of tells him, I'm not going to make it. So T-Bone gives him a gun and tells him, defend yourself, shoot them in the face when they come here. So that was me. I played that character as well. But Lars kind of handed me the part. So Lars kind of knew what I could do as an actor, how versatile I was, and what my abilities were. Also, we joked a lot, and I shared with him a lot of my pop culture likes and dislikes. We talk about RoboCop and Predator and you know, Aliens and you name it, you know, all the, you know, Star Wars and all the nerdiest stuff you can think of. So he knew me, my sense of humor. He knew, you know, he knew how I operated. So all this to say that years later, when Watch Dogs 2 was in the pre-production phase, Lars was in charge of directing the vertical slice, the sample of the game they were going to present to the producers to get it greenlit. So they asked me. So Lars said, I want you to come play this new character, Wrench. Wrench was originally conceived as this, who just saw the concept art, immediately disliked it. So like, this guy looks like a douchebag. He looks like a kind of a cheesy. And Lars looked at that and he said, look, that's too this character. Combine him with Sean's personality. Take Sean. I want him to play this motor-mouthed, fast-talking, crazy who looks like that. So he took this enormous risk. Asked me if I was interested. I said, absolutely. That sounds super fucking fun. So we went ahead. We did the vertical slice. We shot it. And the character really stuck. I felt really comfortable in a character like that. I finally got to do something I almost never get to have very... So much so they had to rein me in a little and tell me to take it down by 10-15%. Because really, that's actually happened. Lars says, I want you to... And he's like, yeah, okay, maybe take it down by 10-15%. Like, I warned you. So we found the character. It didn't take that much work, really, because he was pretty much there to begin with. Shot the vertical slice, sent it off. And that was it for me. I thought I was done. I didn't think I would get cast as the character for the game. Usually Ubisoft, you know, they like to hire people from, how can I put this, more prestigious places like, you know, England or LA or New York or even Toronto or Vancouver, which are more actor hubs than Montreal. So it's kind of an understanding that if you're from Montreal, you don't often get booked for these things. I mean, that is changing slowly. I know people who are doing good work here, and that's awesome. But my expectation was they wouldn't keep me as a character. They'd probably want a more name actor. But my one consolation as I left the studio that day, I remember thinking, you know, they can replace me. They can try. Good luck. Like, Wrench, not to sound arrogant, but Wrench is a bit of a tough act to follow. He's very unique. He's very much me. So he's me without the filter. You know, he's me turned up to like 100%, 110%. So, you know, I didn't think they'd find someone who easily slots into what I did with him. You know what I mean? Like, if Wrench was more like he was conceived, some like tough guy, talks like this and was all serious, you know, if that was his deal, And yeah, they could find 50 guys to play that. But the way he was this, like, Jim Carrey, zany, motor mouthed, weirdo, nice guy, awkward, nerd thing. You know, but I kind of created this unique template, I think, that was good enough, because of some weeks later, I got a call from my agent saying they're going to keep me on to play Wrench in the game. So much like when I heard I was going to be in Legion, that was another like watershed moment for me where I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is such a great opportunity. This is going to be a huge game. And it was a pretty big game. I think it suffered ultimately a bit from the rep the first game had. I think a lot of people weren't as on board. Also, that whole like graphics debacle they had. I forget if there was a name for it, but you know, not Puddlegate. They call it the Spider-Man thing, but you know, they oversold the graphics a bit.
Yeah, that downgraded.
People were disappointed they downgraded exactly. So in the first Watch Dogs, I think people were a bit reticent and didn't want to necessarily pre-order the second one as easily or as readily. But I mean, look, I, to this day, literally every week, get a tweet from someone saying, hey, I'm playing the game now, and I love it, and I think it's great, and I love your work, and, you know, Wrench is awesome. So, you know, a game that you can play that long after it's out, I think definitely has some longevity. And it's still a relevant game, given the world we live in now, so it's been really great for that, you know, for that alone. So they called me, they kept me on the game. They unfortunately, it's just the way the business works, but they actually replaced the guy who was playing Marcus initially in the Vertical Slice. It wasn't Ruffin playing Marcus. It was some other guy. And he was great. We had really good chemistry, but once I came back and Ruffin was there and we started working together, that's when it clicked, and I'm like, I get it, though. I see why they replaced him. This guy has something special, really works well. And I think he was a brilliant casting decision. So that's the long and convoluted story as to how I came about getting Wrench as a character. And, you know, I can't trace an origin point, but, you know, Legion came from Watch Dogs 2, which came for me from Bloodline, which came from Bad Blood, which came from Watch Dogs 1, which came from Assassin's Creed series, right? Like, everything I've done led to something else. I worked with more and more people who got to know me and my work and who trusted me to do good work. So incrementally, I kind of built up my cred, my reputation, that when someone was willing to take a risk on something, they chose me to take that risk with. And, you know, here we are 4 years later, and it's still paying off. So, yeah, I feel very blessed for being in this situation. But at the same time, you know, it's not, I don't want to sound too esoteric here, but it's not luck as far as I'm concerned. People go, oh, you're so lucky. You're an actor. You're lucky. You're a voice actor. And it's like, well, no, I worked hard. I made sacrifices. I studied. I got rejected thousands of times for thousands of things, which is all part of it. But you put in the time, you put in the work, kind of forge that base, and eventually, you know, someone once told me luck is when preparedness meets opportunity. So I really see that as being a prime example of that. I was prepared because I had trained and studied and worked and I was experienced. I was prepared, and the opportunity, Watch Dogs 2 Wrench, popped up. So when those two things merged, you could call that luck, I guess. In that sense. And you know, that's what I love about acting, is you never know what's beyond the horizon in terms of opportunities to come.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned earlier that you wrenchified the script a bit for Watch Dogs Legion. How often do you get the opportunity to do that, to go outside the script as written, add your own quirks and characteristics?
You mean in general, as an actor?
Yeah.
It depends a lot on, well, a few things. It depends on the project, the type of project, the type of work. Is it, you know, is it voice work? Is it theater? Is it film? Is it mocap, motion capture? So that, you know, those different industries, those different mediums have different attitudes, I guess, towards script modification. It also depends how big your part is, who you are as an actor. If you're Tom Cruise, you can say, I'm going to change this line. I'm going to go, yes, sir, Mr. Cruise, right away. if you're waiter number seven, it might be like, just do the line as written. But it also depends on the director as well. The director might be open to that stuff. Depends if the writers are on board. If it's dubbing, clearly you have to stick exactly to the script because it's
all timed
specifically
down
for what's on the screen. Yeah, it's a timing thing. If it's video games, I've had a range of experiences, but usually they're pretty open if they're small things. You know what I mean? Like, the key to voice acting, especially in video games, as they get better and better, is realism seems to be a big driving factor in a lot of performance. What they're hoping to get from actors is realism. And I see why, because graphics get better, immersion, lighting, dynamic shading, everything, all that. It's so much more photoreal now that, to look into a meadow, the sun streaming through the leaves and the grass swaying, and you're there, right? That's an incredible achievement. So it shouldn't be difficult to have an actor be convincing because people talk all the time, right? And yet you often encounter stiff performances in video games, either because the actors don't know the medium or the director's not doing his job, or I don't know. So in terms of making things natural, usually they're pretty open with you tooling around a little bit. But I've had projects where I go off even a bit, or even make contractions, and they're like, oh, could you just read it as written, please? I'm like, all right, fine. So in Wrench's case, I had a lot of things in my favor. I originated the character when I first played him in Watch Dogs 2. Once they decided I was coming back as Wrench, the writers who knew me changed the script and adapted the rest of the script they were writing to encompass more of my personality and my pop culture references and love of pop culture. So, in a way, I kind of helped write the script that way. But I'll give you an example. There's a scene in the game where Marcus is talking to Satara on a bench somewhere. And in the script, it says Wrench walks up to them and says, hey, Marcus, you should get going. The car is over there. I parked over there. And he says, okay, Satara, I got to go. And then I'm like, follow me. And he follows me off screen. And we go to the car and the mission starts. I looked at that. I'm like, well, okay, but that's freaking boring, right? It's too normal for Wrench. So on the day when we shot it, I walked up to him. And Wrench did this big flourish and this big, kind of Victorian bow. And he goes, your carriage awaits, sir. Right? And then I'm sorry?
I remember that scene now.
Yes, exactly. It's a pretty memorable scene. And Ruffin, who's a great actor and wonderful at improv and very accepting of whatever I give him, he got up and he bowed. He's like, oh, well, thank you very much, sir. And then we both kind of scamper off together while Satara kind of shakes her head. That was such a real moment because it was two guys who are bros. They have a history. You can tell that they have love for each other with this kind of ease. They have this wit. They banter. It filled out the performance in a way that it's hard for a script writer to capture. That's the actor's job, is to bring in just the right amount of modification, if you will, to make it your own. Because if it's your own, it's natural. And if it's natural, then it's believable. So, as I get older and get more experience and more accolades, I tend to get bolder with my tendency to want to, massage things a little, I guess. But Wrench was a bit of a unique situation because, like I said, I originated the characters. So they literally told me, especially for the second block, to say, look, the second block of shooting, we don't quite have the same team of writers. I'd like you to look at the script and really make it your own. If you have any suggestions at all, we'll hear them. I did a lot of work at home, read through the script, saw what came to mind, saw it play out in my head, wrote a bunch of stuff down, brought it to the rehearsal space, suggested it. They kept, I'd say, about 90% of what I suggested was kept in some form or another. And they were usually, delighted with it. And then I'd have a suggestion for something. I'd just run it over by the writer, who'd be accessible through Zoom or something, and he's just laughing his ass off. I'm like, okay, well, laughing clearly has validity. That's clearly an endorsement right there. So that was wonderful. But they kind of asked me to do it there. So that was a bit of a, you know, unique situation. But again, if it's a character you know well, you helped originate, or you're with some directors who are really open to a lot of collaborative workshopping, you can do it. But yeah, you kind of have to take it on a case-by-case basis.
Okay. I'm conscious of the time, because I know you said you only had a limited amount of time. So move on off of Wrench. Sure. For at least one question. Since Marsh's fate has been deliberately left unknown in Outlast, do you have a personal favorite theory in regards to what happened to him?
It's a good question. Actually, you're the second person to ask me that in like 2 weeks. It's fun. I hadn't heard that question before. I don't know. I actually have a guilty confession to make, because I never actually played all the way through the first Outlast. Not because it's not a good game. It is quite a good game, but I don't like first-person survival horror games, because I hate feeling powerless when I play a game. I hate running and hiding. I'm like, give me a hammer, give me a hacksaw, give me something, a baseball bat. I'll find my way out. So I've been meaning to get to it and play it. I have Outlast 1 and 2 on my hard drive. I just never got around to it. So, I mean, I know how the game ends, clearly, because I had to record the ending. But I don't know. I can't give an informed answer to that, because, first of all, it was a long time ago. And second of all, I haven't physically played through the entire story. So I'm sure if I did today, with what's in the game, I'd probably have an idea. Though, you know, that's something else, too, is people tend to assume, and I don't blame them, but they tend to assume that actors are in on everything when it comes to a performance or a character or a game world. That's not the case. Often, you know, without giving anything away, I learned a few really quite big things about Wrench when I was reading the script. To the point where when I would, you know, get into the studio, I'd be like, is this true? And am I interpreting this correctly? And they're like, yep. And I'm like, oh, that's amazing. Great. Cool. You know, like stuff that you'd assume I knew when I played him back in Watch Dogs 2. But the point is, you don't completely flesh out a character like that unless he's going to be like the main character, or unless his backstory is relevant. And part of Wrench's appeal was how mysterious he was anyway, right? So same thing in Outlast. These games, these first-person games, they're meant to be immersive. It's your story, not character's story, right? Like, I don't know if you see the difference, if you get what I'm driving at, but like, you know, when I play as Jin Sakai, I'm watching Jin's story unfold. I'm controlling him, but I'm watching his story. Whereas when I'm playing Half-Life 2, I'm Gordon Freeman. I'm not watching his story. I'm living his story, right? So I think Outlast kept ending a little kind of vague and open-ended, so that the player could kind of end the story themselves, because it's your story, right? So right. Maybe that's a cop-out answer. But all that to say that if there is an actual scripted answer to that, I don't know it. So I have no idea.
That's fair enough. Okay, final question, and then we'll let you go. Since you're a sci-fi fan, this is the most difficult question. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Oh, that is a difficult one. But I can answer that pretty easily. I'd say Star Wars. A fan of both. I've never been a Trekkie, like someone who's like really into Star Trek. I watched many of the 60s episodes of the show. I think I watched all of Next Generation. Then I started watching Deep Space Nine, but kind of fell out of it. I wasn't too interested. And then from then on, I didn't watch anything else. I didn't see Voyager. I didn't see Enterprise. New one, I forget what it's called. I haven't watched any of Discovery. Thank you. I haven't watched any of that. Though I just the other day only now realized that the captain is that woman from Walking Dead. Right? Isn't that her? It's the same actor, I believe.
I haven't watched The Walking Dead, I will admit.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, so I followed it. But Star Wars, I was a diehard fan since I was a kid. Like, I love the original trilogy. I was disappointed with let's say most of what came after the original trilogy. I've softened on some of them since then. And some I think are pretty good. Like Rogue One, I think is a good standout. But I wasn't really happy with the rest of the material. But Mandalorian kind of brought me back. And actually, it was a two-punch combo. I played Jedi Fallen Order, which I really liked. I thought it was great, really good story. And Rogue One, I thought was pretty good. And then Mandalorian really hooked me. I wasn't expecting to like it. I loved it. And it really kind of sucked me back into, you know, like I'm kind of hopeful again for the Star Wars franchise. I think they took some weird turns and some stuff that was divisive. And look, you know, I'm not someone who's going to say someone's wrong for liking a movie. That's the beauty of art, is subjective. So what's great for one person is crap for someone else. No one's right. It wasn't what I was personally hoping for out of the franchise, but now I finally feel they're veering back into stuff that I can connect to. I guess I approach the stuff much more from a actory standpoint. Like I really, really, really care about the script, character development, dialogue, pacing. No, spectacle means almost nothing to me. I love spectacle, but if those things aren't in place, it doesn't matter how pretty something is. I can't get behind it. So I really enjoyed The Mandalorian and Fallen Order for those reasons. I thought there was a solid script, character development, good dialogue, great acting, all that stuff. So yeah, I'm more firmly in the Star Wars camp. Because, I mean, Star Trek lost me not because it was bad. It's just, I don't know. I think Star Trek now, like the J.J. Abrams stuff kind of lost me because I never saw Star Trek as a action sci-fi adventure series. To me, it's about... Sorry?
I'm not a fan of those either.
No, I mean, I don't mind the genre. I just think it's wrong for Star Trek. So, yeah. You know, all the high-octane J.J. Abrams stuff, I just didn't care for it. Which is funny, because when I watched his first Star Trek movie, I remember thinking it was all right, but I wasn't super on board. And then they got kind of progressively worse. But when I first watched that movie, I remember thinking, this guy really should handle Star Wars. Because that's kind of more the aesthetic he has. And then he did direct Star Wars. I was like, oh, no, maybe he shouldn't be directing Star Wars after all. Oh, well. But yeah, so like, you know, I love the more pensive Star Trek. Like my favorite Star Treks, I mean, Wrath of Khan is kind of hard to beat. But Voyage Home, I love. And Undiscovered Country, I think, is a fantastic Star Trek movie. Because to me, that's much more in the vein of what Star Trek was about. Like, you know, it was a more intellectual show. It was about people and more politicized kind of political situations, as opposed to we have to blow up the giant laser cannon type of thing. Nothing wrong with blowing up giant laser cannon. I'm just saying they belong in different genres. And when you blur the genres, yeah, you kind of lose what makes them unique, you know?
Okay, well, Nikki, do you have anything to add before Sean leaves?
I think, like, I mean, you've covered a lot, and it's been absolutely fascinating, so thank you. I think the only thing I would ask very quickly is there, you probably get this question a lot, I'm sure, but is there anything that you would give as sort of advice to people who maybe are interested in kind of your line of work, you know, getting into voice acting or mocapping in games?
Sure. I mean, I do get that question, but I understand why I get that question. You know, I love video games. I love cartoons. I love animated shows. I love, you know, a lot of the work I do, the stuff I consume. So if you love that stuff, why not try to work in the fields that create that stuff? Especially if you're passionate about something, then you feel like you have something to contribute, you know? So my advice would be, it's okay to dream. Have dreams, embrace them, pursue them. You have to put in work, you have to put in the time, you have to make the sacrifices. You have to be ready to push through failure, rejection, self-doubt. Because I think a lot of people are exposed to the reality, I use quotation marks around reality here, but they're exposed to the reality of the acting world through media. Media does a very poor job of representing that reality. It's all glamour and parties and paparazzi and red carpets and, you know, that's the top 0.0001% maybe. Most of the actors I know, they're hardworking people with families who it's a job. It's now it's not just a job. I never, ever wake up to job book that day and go, I got to go to work. Never. It's always, yes, today it's dubbing. Tomorrow it's mocap. I have an audition on this day. I have a callback on that day. Oh, I've got a session for this video game, right? I love my work. So passion is a really important facet of this. It can't be hobby. I mean, it can be. If you like, you know, creating original characters and voicing them or doing animation or doing fan fiction, go for it. Enjoy it. Have fun. But the investment you put into that hobby is a small portion of the amount of work you'd have to do that professionally. Because, you know, being in the booth isn't just about, oh, I can do funny voices or I can impersonate this character. The craft, it's like anything else, right? There's technical stuff, technique on how to use the mic properly, proper etiquette of how to deal with the sound person and what are the technical requirements of what you're doing, understanding how to take direction, interpret direction, how to be creative and improvise, but still without stepping over the line and knowing what the director wants. Like it's a very nuanced, multifaceted thing to act. It's not something you can just do because it's something you'd like to do. But if you're passionate about doing it, then pursue it. So take acting lessons. Go to a theater program or take a class. You know, start with one class, a Meisner class, a whatever class, you know, improv. A voice class, an audition technique class, a scene study class, a local theater troupe, whatever. You know, immerse yourself in the craft you want to do professionally. Put in the time, put in the hours, make connections, and fail. Fail over and over again. That's how you learn. Failure is your greatest teacher. Don't fail because you're being unprofessional or being lazy. Fail because there's so much more to learn. You know, learn from your failure. Learn from your mistakes. Embrace your successes because you will start having more and more of those. You know, and then get ready to push through the lows when there's no work, when you're this close to getting that part, but someone else got it, or you know, you fumbled that audition pretty badly and you should have been more prepared. Well, then next time prepare more. Like, don't look for excuses as to why you're failing. You know, give yourself reasons to keep going, knowing you'll succeed if you really believe in it. If I can give you an example of that ratio, if you will, not to discourage people from entering acting. I'd say if you're passionate about it, go for it. Be realistic. I graduated from a class of 19 people when I finished my theater studies in Montreal at the Dawson Professional Theater Program. 12 women, 7 men graduated. Graduated, meaning we're now actors, we can go out to the world and ply our trade. I checked in with my fellow alumni a few years after we had graduated, maybe 5 years afterwards, and a third of us were still struggling to make it. A third of us were working as actors, and a third of us had kind of fallen out of it completely and decided they were going to do something else, which is fair. You're not obligated to pursue acting if you find out it's not for you. And then another 5, 6, 7 years later, we met again with some people, and we got informed as to how everyone was doing. And I found out on that day that only one person was left acting professionally, that everyone else had moved on to something else, and that one person me. I was like the sole survivor of my class. So I'm not saying this to brag. I'm just saying that this domain I work in has a lot of attrition. It tends to peel away people who are less passionate or who can't afford to, you know, not be making a lot of money for 10 years, or whose life changes in a way that they just can't pursue acting, or they have a bad experience and they want to quit. I don't fault anyone for quitting. I'm saying if you want to have a career, you have to have that career through all these tests and pitfalls you're going to encounter. on the way to getting there. Like, I look back now at my career, and I see myself working regularly, having really great opportunities, having some, you know, minor celebrity, I guess, successes with certain characters in games that are known by thousands or tens of thousands of people. And that's amazing. But if I look back 10 years ago, I never thought I'd be here. When I look back 5 years from 10 years ago, and I'd only been in the game for 5 years, I never would have thought I'd be even 5 years ahead of there. So I'm, you know, you build up, you climb the steps slowly, but eventually you look down and you're like, oh my God, I'm nearing the top of the pyramid of my own personal, you know, pyramid, whatever goals I have, I'm finally reaching them. So, you know, put in the work, put in the time, study. Acting is about truth and connecting with your truth. And that's great, but you need to also learn the technique of how to convey that truth to people, whether it's through voice, through movement, camera work, whatever. So, you know, put in the time, study, take classes, do work, you know, do short films, do community theater, you know, apply your trade, act as much as you can, and eventually get an agent, which is difficult, but again, you can do it. Maybe make yourself a demo as well. If you're a voice actor, make yourself a voice demo, something that showcases your range and your talent as a voice actor. Or a reel, a demo reel. If you're a film actor, make yourself a reel of scenes. If you don't have stuff, make stuff up. You know what I mean? Shoot your own movie. I shot my own fan film of something a few years ago because I wanted to be the Punisher and beat people up. So I just did it because I was not going to have that opportunity in life. So I shot my own film. You know, like, create your own work if you need to until the right people know you exist and give you opportunities. Get an agent. Once you have an agent, your agent can start sending you out to audition. Then go audition, get refused a million times, but eventually get a callback, eventually get a booking, eventually get something bigger that leads to bigger. The longer you're in the industry, the more people you know, the more people you're connected to, the more people cherish your work and want to give you opportunities. All that eventually balloons into a career. I mean, I want to be realistic. You do need some measure of talent too. And I'm not someone to tell someone if they have talent or not. That really is a question of the industry, determining if you have something they want or they need. But with talent and perseverance and passion, putting in the time, I really believe that almost anyone can have a career doing this. But it's a hard road. So I'd say, you know, plan. And consequently for that.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Well, we've used up all of your time. Thank you for coming on, Sean.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. That was very nice.
It was very informative.
The chat with you guys.
Yeah. Thank you for coming. Everyone, that was Sean Baichu. Check out Watch Dogs Legion's DLC when it comes out, and you get to hear him.
Sometime in June, it's coming out.
Once again, thank you to Sean Baichu, and we've got a few minutes to fill, so let's quickly cover some of the week's news. Monster Hunter Rise released on Switch this past week, and it's sold 4 million units. That's a couple, isn't it?
Yeah, especially when you consider as well that this news, like, isn't even a week after the game has been out. The game literally came out, there was a weekend, and it sold 4 million units. It is worth pointing out that Monster Hunter World managed to ship 5 million copies in the same time, but considering World was, like, sort of, not to say that Rise isn't a AAA title, but, like, you know, World was this big, shiny AAA console game, like, it's understandable that that piqued more people's interests. But I've been playing Monster Hunter Rise.
Is that when it came out on Xbox? Because it came out on Xbox and then later on PC, didn't it? So,
yeah. I think World came out on PS4 and Xbox at the same time, and then the PC release was a few months later.
So multi-format title. So of course it'd sell more.
Rise is getting a PC release in a few months' time. They announced it like couple of weeks before the game came out, but you know, when the choice is day one, play with friends or wait a few months. And Monster Hunter fits, like, it feels really good as a handheld title. I say that I've been playing it literally solo, but like, it's nice because it is one of those games where you can pick up and maybe do a hunt that takes like 45 minutes and it's really clutch whether you're going to do it, or you've got 10 minutes to kill and you're like, oh, do you know what? I'll just quickly go do a delivery quest, and you just run around, pick some mushrooms, done. You know, it's it really is quite flexible. But this is, the Rise is really nice because they just basically decided that mobility needed to be more. So you've got a dog that you can like ride around on. You've got the wire bug that lets you zip line around the place. You can attack from there as well. You can, with like the right combination of moves, basically move from one end of the map all the way, like nearly to the other side, and still land a hit on a monster. And it's just the best feeling. And you can ride monsters now using the wire bug. And there is nothing more funny than getting on the back of one monster and launching it at another monster, making them both fall over, and then you just run in and start hacking away at them. I'm only like 8 hours in, but my gosh, this is probably one of the top five games of the year for me. And it's, we're at like end of March.
Not fair enough. So it's deserving to have sold 4 million units.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. It'll probably go on to sell more. It's actually, at the same time as selling 4 million, it's physically sold out in Japan already.
Now, is that because Nintendo haven't made enough copies, like, you know, Super Mario or 3D All-Stars?
No. It's not one of those cases. It's just, yeah, it just sold out. I mean, very quickly, slight tangent that you mentioned that. Apparently, I saw, I don't know why we didn't include this actually as a news topic, but apparently the sales of that Mario collection went up something ridiculous, like 200%. The last couple of days, because everyone suddenly became aware that, oh yeah, it's going away in like 48 hours at the time of recording.
Fear of missing out, FOMO. Not that you're missing out on 20, 30 year old games, but anyway.
Could be.
Something you're not going to miss out on if you're a Xbox Game Pass subscriber are a slew of indie titles, which IDEA Xbox covered. There were over 20 titles that they've announced are coming soon and straight onto Game Pass. Did any catch your eye? Stalker 2, The Ascent, Wild at Heart?
I think The Ascent does seem quite interesting. Kind of down for seeing some more of that. Boyfriend Dungeon, obviously. I don't know why, but...
Your boyfriends are swords, that's why.
Yeah, that's all I need to know.
Yep.
There's a couple of like interesting titles, but like I want to see a little bit more. Moonglow Bay looks quite nice. I've just seen as well on the list, I've just been reminded that Hello Neighbor 2 is apparently there. And like I always forget that Hello Neighbor is a thing. And any time I get reminded, I'm also reminded that it is a multi-million dollar franchise.
Yeah, for some reason, my 8-year-old is really, really big fan of that, and I don't know why. She's watched a bunch of people streaming it on YouTube, and when given the opportunity to play it, she's not really that fussed. She just wants to watch other people play it. Still, she got excited about Hello Neighbor 2.
Yeah, I can't. I've never played them myself, but I've seen over the years all the hype and seen lots of coverage and videos, and I know at one point it was just all you could find on like YouTube channels, like that was all people were playing. Has a very successful series of books, apparently.
Didn't know there were books, I'll be quite honest.
Sure, it's Hello Neighbor.
Are you thinking of Captain Underpants?
No, but Captain Underpants, right? Real talk, when I was a kid, I loved them. Even now, still love them. They're great.
My daughter has them, it has a load of them, and yeah, they're not bad.
Yeah.
There are worse kids' properties.
Yeah, it is Hello Neighbor that has the books. Also, I don't know why, just because I'm looking for this information, just been reminded, another one that always surprises me how popular it is, Bendy and the Ink Machine. That's not in the list of Xbox titles, by the way. It's just,
right. I've not heard of that.
I'm kind of going down weird memory lane right now of like weird games that were like people became obsessed with a few years back. Yeah, YouTubes and stuff.
Hello Neighbor Collection 1618. I won't say where because they don't sponsor us. Someone else who doesn't sponsor us, Cyberpunk.
They definitely don't.
Yeah, they've released their patch 1.2, their long-awaited patch, which fixes a slew of things that were not broken, apparently.
It fixes some stuff, maybe. It's only 8,000 words.
Yeah, it takes you a solid minute to fast scroll through.
Yeah, it's... wow. It's... they released a few like short videos the other week that were like, here are some new features, and it was things like changing how the police spawn, improved vehicle handling, and like a new feature. They call it like car rocking or something. But basically, if you get your car stuck and you can't, you know, if it like gets stuck on a piece of geometry and the wheels aren't touching the ground, it'll start to like rock and until it eventually gets back on drivable surface, which is quite nice. That seems to really just be the kind of headliners of the patch. There's lots of fixes. There was one that made me chuckle, which was like doing a stealth takedown on someone. They now won't react as though you just bumped into them. I personally think that should have stayed as a feature because that's funny. You go to shank someone, they're just like, hey, watch where you're walking. But it's 8,000 words of just improvements across the board.
My favorite one under environment and levels, fix the misspelled leaving Night City sign.
Yeah, lots of spelling mistakes have been fixed. I saw that floating objects have been fixed. Apparently your clothes should no longer disappear randomly when you're riding a bike. Yeah, it's I don't, the problem is like as far as patch notes go, considering it's a 1.2 patch as well, it's a 27 gigabyte download on PC.
It was 28.
27 point something.
It was 28.8. I downloaded it.
Oh, okay. I'm just apparently lying to everyone today, thanks. I feel that you're not gonna like, you know, download it, boot into the game, and suddenly be like presented with like, here's a new mechanic. It's stuff that you're gonna probably like as you're playing be like, oh yeah, didn't that used to happen? And like it's just not now. So it's probably a much better experience. I still need to download it and just jump in. Admittedly, I wasn't very far into the game. Unless you are actually like mad about Cyberpunk, if you've already finished it, there's nothing looking over this patch that warrants, in my opinion, a second playthrough. Like, it's just quality of life improvements. Who knows what's going to be next? According to the roadmap they released a while back, it's meant to be DLC next. So, yeah, let's see what happens.
You should now automatically unequip a charged grenade when entering safe areas. Anyway, that's about all we have time for. Thank you for joining me, Nikki, and thank you to our guest, Sean Baichu. Thank you for listening to this episode. Don't forget to check out GameGrin.com, where you find all of our writing. Keep an eye on social media, just search for GameGrin to find out whenever a new podcast goes live, as well as the daily news, reviews, and articles. Finally, if you subscribe via Amazon Music, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Stitcher, thank you. And if you can leave a review on your platform of choice, an even bigger thank you. And finally, game on.